Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest Bubble Crossover special here. This is Evan Sidery of Locked On Suns, joined by Mark King, the host of Locked On Grizzlies. We're going to talk about the Suns and the Grizzlies today on our podcast. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
Doing well. And let me ask you first off, how unexpected was this year for the Grizzlies? Because they are in the driver's seat, 32 and 33. They have a lot of separation from everyone else in this bubble, so to say, for the Western Conference, at least four games ahead of everyone else right now in the standings. What's it been like watching this kind of miracle run so far with the Grizz, where they've inserted all this young talent in there and they're coalescing and gelling to this high of level?
Well, you know, it's been quite a turnaround for the Grizzlies. I mean, you know, last year they were bad. The year before that, they were very bad with, you know, not a lot of hope. The last few years of the, you know, quote unquote core four, what we called them here in Memphis with Zach and Mark and Mike and Tony, you know, those last few years weren't great because you could just kind of see the decline of the Grizzlies, and it was a very slow process. But, you know, it was, you know, a lot of mismanagement by the front office those last few years of the core four. And the Grizzlies installed a new front office last year over the last summer. And, you know, it's been quite the turnaround, and you can see the effects of that front office and the fingerprints that they put on this team very quickly, and a very quick turnaround. And they've had this team go from being you know, a lot of sad and miserable people looking at this team to a lot of hopeful fans, just because of what they've been able to do over the last, just, you know, again, just a little over a year, right before the draft last year. It feels like less than a year, but it's been more than that now because we've been in you know, a shutdown for so long. We feel like it's still only March, but it's not. But yeah, in just a little over a year, you can really see clearly see what this front office has done. And so it's been quite exciting for myself as well as other fans around the city.
Yeah, looking at John Morant, because from the Suns' perspective last year, they were number two in their reverse standings before the lottery actually happened. We saw the Pelicans jump up as well as the Grizzlies jump up, and teams like the Suns fall down and not be able to get players like Zion Williamson or John Morant. But the Grizzlies were the huge beneficiaries there, jumping up to number two overall and getting a talent like John Morant. Stayed in Tennessee, where he went to school at Murray State University, or right down the road from Kentucky to Tennessee, so to say. 17.6 points per game. Also, 7 assists, almost 37% from 3, almost 50% from the field overall, Mark. John Morant's transition to the NBA has been pretty seamless for him.
Yeah, you know, I was super excited, obviously, about John Morant. You know, I told people even last year right after the Grizzlies got the number 2 pick, and there were people in the city that were like to think that there was a debate in terms of John Morant and RJ Hampton. And I was never, you know, to me, it was always Zion and Ja were 1A and 1B because Ja has – such an ability to see the floor, you know, and his vision and his assist and his passing. That's something that, you know, will always translate to the NBA. There are a lot of things, there are a lot of skills in this league that don't sometimes translate from college to the NBA because it's such a very, very different game. But vision is something I think will always translate to the NBA and be able to see the lanes, passing, that kind of thing. Things that John Morant really excels at, I think we're always going to translate to this league. And so that made it an easy transition for him. You look back in this league and in the season, and even, you know, it only took him probably 5 or 6, 7 games to really get going. And for people to go, oh, wow, okay, well, I did not know that existed. And so, you know, what's been surprising for John Morant, and I think what most people will probably attest to this, is his playmaking ability, you know, that killer instinct that he has, that he will size anybody up and this league and kind of go after you. You know, he yelling at James Harden to tell that MF-er about me during the middle of the year, which is just something people just absolutely love. But I think that's something you got to have in this league to really be a true superstar. And I think that's something that surprised most people, is that just playmaker attitude that he's been able to, you know, have a lot of success with in a very short amount of time.
Looking at Jaren Jackson too as well, Mark, because he is the 1B to John Morant's 1A, so to say. And in his second year so far for Grizzlies, in only 28 minutes per game, 17 points, 5 rebounds, a block and a half per game, while shooting almost 40% from 3 at 39.7%. Triple J looks like he's well on his way to on the start path too, Mark. And if you look at not only John Morant, which you just talked about, but also Triple J, this team is set up very well with this 1-2 inside duo for the next decade.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is an excellent player, but he's not a guy that is, he's not a primary guy. You know, Jaren is not a guy that wants the spotlight necessarily. Like he's not a guy that is like, give me the ball. He's a really good player, but, you know, for lack of a better term, he's not a Batman. He's a more of a Robin. And so it really has helped him having Ja this year, because Ja is very much that guy. He wants to be that guy. He wants to have the ball in his hands at the end of the game. And Jaren is just not, you know, he's not necessarily he doesn't want to, but he's not likely to go and demand it. And so, and he's just an extremely good player, and it helps to have someone like Ja alongside him to really pull it out. And I think that, you know, even if the Grizzlies had have gotten Zion, yeah, they would have been better as a team, but I don't know if Jaren would have been better as a player. And so I think, you know, he was always good last year, don't get me wrong, and he's an excellent player, but I think that Ja Morant elevates him into that next level.
Looking as well at a couple more young players before we dive into your overall opinion of what's kind of for the Grizzlies inside this bubble format in Orlando, I want to hit on a few former Suns here as well. And that trade that the Suns and Grizzlies made last year, where it was pretty much a salary dump because Josh Jackson has off the court issues. They want to get off his contract immediately, free up some cap space for a guy like Ricky Rubio, who ended up signing the Kelly Oubre extension as well. I wanted to hit on De'Anthony Melton for a second, because I was long banging the drum for De'Anthony Melton in Phoenix. I think he did very well for himself last year, even though the stats might not prove it. Very good defender. One of the better, I think, on-ball defenders for a guard in the NBA already at his stage of his career. And in Memphis, I think he's earned more and more trust from the coaching staff there, improved his stats a little bit there as well. It feels like he's going to be a restricted free agent this upcoming offseason, Mark, but I feel like De'Anthony Melton has found a home in Memphis. He really does gel well with a guy like Ja Morant as his backup.
Yeah, De'Anthony Melton has been lightning in a bottle this year. He's been excellent, very, very good player. And something I don't think that, you know, the Grizzlies have got a lot of guys that had kind of played them into some contracts, De'Anthony Melton being one of those guys. And so they really have a tricky situation where they got a lot of people and they really don't know what to do. We got someone like Josh Jackson is, for example, as well. Obviously, you guys know Josh Jackson very well. But, you know, he's the type of player as well that I think has played himself into another contract, but, you know, I would money, I don't know, but I think that, you know, it would behoove the Grizzlies to see what they have in Josh Jackson. And they have, you know, this latter part of the year, he was obviously with the Hustle for a lot of the year, but they have, you know, it's been, since he's been with the main club, he's been good. And so De'Anthony Melton kind of fits the same mold, is that, you know, he's played himself into some money, played himself into a possible contract, and they've got a lot of those guys. And, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with all of them. I'd be shocked if they don't give De'Anthony Melton, you know, don't match De'Anthony Melton. Like you mentioned, he's a restricted free agent. So I would be shocked if, you know, they didn't match De'Anthony Melton. He's a guy that, you know, this front office that is installed right now had their eyes on De'Anthony Melton in that draft. They weren't, you know, these guys that are in the main front office now weren't in charge, but they were in the front office. They weren't just, but they liked De'Anthony Melton, but ultimately the front office, the general manager, drafted Javon Carter instead, which was a mistake. So De'Anthony Melton is a guy that they had on the radar all along and just didn't have a chance to get them. And so they finally kind of righted that wrong and got De'Anthony Melton back, so to say. So yeah, he's a guy that I really like. He's a guy that has played tremendously well, and is a very good, you know, is a very good third kind of point guard for the Grizzlies. You know, they can put Tyus Jones out there Tyus Jones out there with Ja, or to be De'Anthony with Ja. They've played them all three together at some point. So, like, you know, it leaves some opportunity for Ja to be able to not play so hard on defense, so kind of start on offense sometimes. So it gives them a bunch of different looks for sure.
I was thinking with the Grizzlies, looking at their cap space here at the upcoming summer mark, or this offseason, because obviously the offseason is not going to be starting in October instead of July. The Justice Winslow trade took away some of their salary there. They could still get to around $10 to $15 million in cap space if they wanted to. How does that Justice Winslow trade impact the long term here? Because I kept looking at this team as maybe that they're the one team that could go after Brandon Ingram this offseason as like a max offer in their contract. But of course, getting Justice Winslow and the way they did with Andre Iguodala, I think was a very solid deal for them. What's the future look like for this Grizzlies team as far as locking everyone up? Because like you mentioned, Melton might be coming back. Josh Jackson might be coming back on a short deal. It seems like this team's kind of locked in their core, so to say, with Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, Justice Winslow, some guys off the bench as well, Dylan Brooks, Tucson extension this past offseason. I think this team is pretty much locked in. How do you like this young core overall?
Yeah, you know, it is a team that at the beginning of the year, you would think they would have more more space to work with next year. And they will have some space to work with. There are some monies coming off the books. You know, dead money will be, you know, Waiters and Miles Plumlee coming off the books. So you're going to have something, definitely some money to work with. You're going to have quite a bit of money to do, but it just, like you mentioned, it all depends on what you decide on, you know, your other rookie free agents. You decide on, you know, you decide on De'Anthony Melton, what you decide on Josh Jackson. Those things are all things you have to look in, you know, look into. But overall, I think they're set up pretty well because, you know, you're going to have a lot of that money coming off the books when it's time to pay John Morant. You know, right now they have nothing. When it's time to give John Morant his money, when it's time to get Jaren Jackson Jr. his money, all those type of things, there's nothing impeding them. And that's the most important thing, is that when it gets time to pay the guys you want to pay, when it's time to max out John, and when it's time to max out Jaren, and give them 5-year deals, there's not going to be anything stopping them from doing that. And so, I you know, Justice Winslow is a trade, you know, that was always for the future. It was never for the here and now. And they traded for Justice Winslow to be their starting small forward, to be their smarting possible two guard, or to alleviate John Morant at the point guard at some spot. So, you know, Justice Winslow was always a target for the future. You know, he's part of this, like you mentioned, this young core. And so they've got a lot of flexibility there in terms of their players and what they want to do with other fringe players, role players, like, you know, Melton and a Grayson Allen, things, those guys. So there's definitely things they can do for sure. But in terms of when it's time to pay people, they can definitely do that for sure.
Last one I had for you, Mark, before we go on to some Phoenix Suns talk. If the Grizzlies do make this 8 seed, and they are pretty comfortably in that position right now, a few games ahead of Portland and the others in this bubble, trying to vie for that play-in tournament against this Grizzlies team, how important do you think that playoff sort of history would be if they were to get in and play the Los Angeles Lakers? Maybe it's not a long series, but how important that could be for the development of the young core like Ja and Jaren?
Yeah, I think it's good just being in the bubble. You know, I think it's good just being down where you're playing games that matter. You know, you're playing games that matter every day. And so, you know, I think learning how to win is a real thing in the NBA. Like, learning how to close games is a real thing in the league. And so I think you have to be put in those situations. You know, let's be honest, like, you know, even the Suns and the Grizzlies and the Pelicans, we're all just playing for a chance to lose against the Lakers. So that's totally fine, but it's true. But, you know, to be able to put in those situations as a young team, I think it's good for them. I think it's good for them to be able to learn how to win, to learn how to be in games and playoff games that matter every day. You know, they're going to be playing games down in Orlando. For them, you know, for the Suns in the exact same situation, that matter every day. And so I think you have to be able to be put in those situations to learn from them. Now, I think ultimately, like I mentioned, they're going to lose to the Lakers in the first round. But playing those games every day where, you know, even in the bubble games, they're going to matter for them. The playing game is going to matter for them. Like, you know, those type of situations, you have to just be put in to kind of learn what, you know, where you are at them, you know. And so especially like, you know, young guys like Ja, Jaren, like you mentioned, you just kind of have to be in those situations. And so I think it's great. I think I love the fact that they're down there. And, you know, it's just it's a good situation for them. I don't think it'll be – you know, ultimately what the Grizzlies will, you know, be long-term in the playoffs. But I think that will come with time as these kids get older and as they get better.
Before we move on to our second segment of our crossover, talk about the Phoenix Suns, I want to remind everyone about our sponsor today's show, which is Rock Auto. With the ever-increased numbers of makes and models, now it's possible to stock all the parts you need at a traditional chain store front. So why endure often points for seeming intimidating questioning and waiting for the time in to order parts on the computer? We can do it very cheaply and from your own commute to your home at rockauto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers on for 20 plus years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Where it's your classic or daily driver, you get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. And the RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and price you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So why spend twice as much for the same parts when you can save a lot of money in your pocket at RockAuto.com? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How'd You Hear About Us box and then we sent you. Again, write Locked On, LOCKEDON, and then How'd You Hear About Us box and then we sent you. Rock Auto has a main selection, reliably low prices, and all parts your car will ever need. Go to rockauto.com right now to take advantage of this unique deal from Locked On Podcast Network. We have guests in just a second to talk about the Phoenix Suns with Mark. Alrighty, we are back for segment two of our show of the crossover talking about the Phoenix Suns. So Mark, I'll give you the floor to ask me some questions.
Yeah, man, I think it's like I mentioned, I think it's a very cool idea that the Suns were included. But were you guys, I guess, were you shocked that they have the Suns included? And do you think they have a realistic chance to get into the play-in game with the Grizzlies or maybe Pelicans or whoever that might be?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. It was early up in the air, as you know, Mark, up until really the last day when they officially announced it, whether it be a 16-team format, just go straight into the playoffs and really end the regular season then and there. Maybe if they go 20 teams, just add in a couple more to the bubble, so to say. But 22 made it even for everyone involved there. And the Suns, like you mentioned, were one of the final teams involved there. The Washington Wizards, too, were the final team that really scrape inside and get that invite to Orlando there. But I think it really was kind of surprising. But in the end there, I think it's going to be really beneficial to the Suns team, whether they be really trying to make a playoff push or not. I think it's going to help this young core out so much. But for the Suns to even make that play-in tournament, they're going to have to go 8-0, which is less than a 1% chance of happening. They're so far back in the standings of the Grizzlies here. It looks like, looking at the standings right now, 6 games back. So they're going to have to definitely probably go 8-0 to make it into that play-in tournament ahead of everyone else. They're in the back end of this bubble for the Western Conference teams. They're behind Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, San Antonio, and the Memphis Grizzlies too by a lot. So it's going to take a lot and a lot of luck on their side. Devin Booker probably going off a couple of games for 30, 40 points. DeAndre Ayton showing he might be a superstar in this league eventually. He was doing well for himself before the season went on pause there, averaging 21 points, 12 rebounds per game, and 2 blocks. So I think it's going to take a lot for the Suns team to make a big run, but they could play spoiler here, which I think they could really take advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that it's going to take a lot. I mean, obviously, 8-0. I mean, it is a big hill to climb. You know, what do you think the main, what's the main takeaway for the Suns, it being in the bubble at all? Is it just experience for DeAndre Ayton, for some of the younger guys? But what's the main takeaway, since the most likely scenario is they don't make the playoffs, but they are going to play in these 8 games, that, you know, again, you're going to try to win them as much as you can because they matter. But what's the main takeaway for those guys?
Yeah, I think the main takeaway is going to be development for players like Devin Booker. I think he, even if it's a less than 1% chance of making the playoffs, he's going to take full advantage of that. Because these are the first games in his career where it's going to be really playoff mentality for him. He's always wanted that throughout his career, and I think he's going to take full advantage of this bubble environment, be one of the more dangerous players there, honestly, because I could see him going off a lot of the nights for 30-plus points, and as you know, Mark, he can go off for 30, 40, whenever he wants to, one of the more gifted scorers in this league already at age 23. But for players like DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson as well, this young core they have in place, if Kelly Oubre plays, that's a plus there. He's questionable with his meniscus injury. I think this young chorus needs more time together, and Monty Williams, the head coach there, has mentioned this is an important development time for them as well. So if they don't make a miracle run to the 8-0 run and they end up playing the Grizzlies in the play-in tournament, that would be awesome to see. It'd be a really fun national story. But if not, I think that these minutes for DeAndre Ayton, who's played less than 100 games so far in his career, Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges too, the wings who are the future of the Suns team, they just need more time. And in this playoff environment, so to say, in this bubble, I think it's going to be very beneficial to them.
You mentioned DeAndre Ayton earlier, and I think, I mean, I really, really like DeAndre, and I think he's an excellent player. Is he a superstar in this league to you? What's his future like for the Suns team?
Yeah, I think the Suns' hope is that he is that 1B to Booker's 1A, like we see in Memphis with Jaren Jackson and John Morant, because Ayton showed a lot more promise this year than he did in his first season as a rookie. He's only played 30 games so far this year due to suspension, due to some ankle injuries. But when he's been out there, the Suns have been a near 500 basketball team, averaging 19 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, and almost 2 blocks per game. Very good efficiency-wise as well. But in the latter part of the year, the last month or so, he was the only player in the NBA averaging 21 points, 12 rebounds, and 2 blocks per game, which I think says a lot about his development and where he's come defensively. Because the big question around Ayton in the pre-draft process in 2018 was his defense, but he's really quieted that down this year, doubling his block percentage and his blocks per game, thanks to Monty Williams and the coaching staff really making him the anchor of their defense. And he's really embraced that role. He's mentioned to us on our Zoom calls in the bubble in Orlando that he's had more of an emphasis to really quiet the doubter, so to say, that him being a bad defender, he really wanted to block every shot he could this year, make a point of that. And I think year three is the big year for Ayton. He's only played 101 games, started 95 so far in his career. But I think year three is the big year for Ayton, because I think from what we saw in the latter parts of the year before the season went on pause, he was taking that sort of pseudo leap to being a star. But 2020, 2021 is going to be the year, I think, for the Suns where Ayton's going to have to prove to everyone in the Suns organization he's like a 23-12 type of guy, in nightly double-double and nightly threat to go off for a lot of points like Booker. So I think this is a big step for Ayton to be in this bubble, to have more minutes and more experience in these type of environments, but also looking at next season too, because this Suns team needs to take that leap forward eventually to be a playoff contender. And I think 2020, 2021 could be that year.
What do you think the Suns are missing to be able to take that leap forward? You know, like, you know, you guys acquire Kelly Oubre last year, something, some, a guy that the Grizzlies had targeted in the famous Brooks mix up around the Grizzlies. And I personally really like Kelly Oubre, but what are the Suns missing to take that next leap to get into the, you know, for sure playoff conversation every year?
I think really mostly it's just around the youth and experience of this group, because the oldest guy, the core you mentioned, is only 24 years old, Kelly Oubre. He won't be 25 till December. You have guys like Cam Johnson, McHilbert is there, 23, Booker's 23, Ayton's 21. So it's just going to be, I just think, more experience and more development for this team. But I think there might be one of those years, Mark, in the next year or so where they're kind of on the clock, so to say, right, with Devin Booker, because we know with how stars are nowadays that they can ask out whenever they want to with the player empowerment nowadays. And I think that the Suns are on the clock with Booker. They have about 2 or 3 years before really this rebuild does not end up working. So we need to see some significant steps forward from this Phoenix Suns team. So whether it be in free agency, if they go after like a Danilo Gallinari, for example, or a Davis Bertans to help out with some floor spacing, or if they go after in a big trade, whether it be, I'm not a fan of these ideas, but I could see the Suns in a desperation mode doing like a Blake Griffin trade, Kevin Love type trade to try to maybe elevate the ceiling a little bit, so to say. So they're more in that playoff contention area. But I really think the most of this is just youth and inexperience here. If this core continues to develop forward when they're all around 25, 26 years old, I think that's when they're going to take their lead to be a consistent playoff contender. But with how stars are nowadays and with Devin Booker being – I know he just started his 5-year max extension, but you don't want to be in a position in 2 or 3 years from now where Booker's asking out and kind of the whole impetus of this rebuild falls flat.
Is there a real fear in Phoenix of Devin Booker just getting fed up and just being done with it and asking out? Like, is that a real fear that people talk about and wonder about out loud?
Yeah, from the fan standpoint, for sure. And especially the personalities here, because just from what Booker's dealt with throughout his career so far in 5 years, he's had 100-plus teammates on his team through 5 years. It's been a whole new roster almost every single year. He's yet to win 25-plus games before this year in Phoenix. He had 19 wins, 20, 21, 23, and then this year finally 26. They're on pace to win in the mid-30s for the first time in his career this year. But I think just Booker, throughout his rookie contract, the roster was just not set up for him to succeed there. More about tanking for lottery balls, setting him up to add more young talent around him, but it just didn't work because the Ryan McDonough, the former GM, was of course fired there, and they hired James Jones to be the new GM this time last year as well. So I think with Booker, the first 4 years of his career kind of a waste, so to say. I know he was kind of just in purgatory when he is a star player in this league, and we kind of knew that in his second year, but people did not know until this year he was a star, but being a first-time All-Star this year, because he found a good team around him, like a group of competent teammates. So just the fear is that Booker gets impatient. The fear is that Booker maybe feels that he could go somewhere else, be more valued, be in a better situation for himself. But that's why I think the Suns are on the clock, because they have Ayton. He needs to take a big step forward to be a superstar, to kind of calm the concerns a little bit too, but also maybe the Suns have to make a big move themselves later on, because Booker won't be able to do this all by himself. They're going to have to add more competent teammates on board, even though they already have a good roster in place. Ricky Rubio, Dario Saric, for example, are really good veterans they have on this roster. But I think they need more than that. And I know 2 or 3 years can go by very fast in the NBA. So I don't want to say that the Suns should take it slow, because I think the Suns team with Booker, he's set to really be one of the better scorers in the NBA. I think he's eventually be a scoring title champ in the future. They need to take full advantage of that and very quickly, because Booker is still yet to hit his prime. He's only 23 years old. I can't imagine what kind of player he'd be like when he's 26, 27, but it really stinks from the Suns' perspective if he's doing that at a different jersey.
Yeah, Devin Booker is one of the I think one of the elite scorers in this league. Just being able to put the ball in the bucket. Last question, I'm just curious, because obviously I talked about Josh Jackson earlier. He's a guy that I think Avi Hesley has a lot of history between both teams, and a little history in Memphis and a lot of history with the Suns. Why didn't Josh Jackson work with the Suns? I mean, put away his, I guess, put all his personal history aside and his personal problems aside, just basketball and him being as a player. Well, why didn't it work with Josh Jackson?
Yeah, it's a good question, because from when I watched him through the pre-draft process in 2017, I viewed him as a defense-first Swiss Army type of guy. He could be like almost like an Andre Iguodala. But in Phoenix, he kind of showed right away that he was more of a shot chucker. He took 12 shots per game his rookie year, which really threw everyone for a loop a little bit, because we wondered why he was taking so many shots, being so inefficient in that kind of role. And I feel like he just didn't want to embrace the type of defense-first mentality that Suns wanted him to do. He wanted to be more of a pseudo-star, so to say. And just the clash with the style of Booker didn't work. They thought he'd be more of a defense-first type of guy who would really help out Booker in that sense, but that was not at all what the case. Jackson did not build any muscle on his frame. He's still, I think, around only 205 pounds still. So I think it just says a lot about Jackson. I think just it wasn't a good fit all around between player and team. And it really helped me as far as my scouting things go for the draft, because Jackson really changed how I view some players, because I thought he'd be a completely different player than he was in the pros so far. And in Memphis, he's doing well for himself, but kind of still the same player, where in 20 minutes per game, he's taking 9 shots per game. Still kind of the shot chucker we see the first 2 years in Phoenix there. So if Jackson eventually embraces that defense first role, I think he's going to be good for himself. But I think right now Jackson has yet to prove that he can really develop and try to like change his game, so to say, for the better of the team.
That's awesome, man. I think that both of our teams have got a long way to go for sure to be able to finish this season. And hopefully, nothing really interrupts it. I'm hoping that no players don't really get sick and we don't have a whole lot of COVID problems. So far, so good. It seems that everybody's been down to practicing, but hopefully we can get through this season without too much interruption.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. If Suns fans, you want to go follow Mark on Twitter, go ahead and do so at King_producer and go follow their Twitter account at LockedOnGrizz. Grizzlies fans out there, if you want to go follow me, I'm at EastSidery, ESIDERY, and you can follow our Twitter account as well at LockedOnPHXSuns. Mark, appreciate the time for doing this.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.